So I want to give a talk a little bit about Doctors for Global Health and our recent General Assembly. We have General Assemblies every year in the group Doctors for Global Health. You know, it's great to be connected on Facebook or the internet or telephone calls and stuff, but there's really nothing like actual physical presence. You can smell what people are like. You can see what they like to taste. There's a lot of communication that happens, in person. So despite the carbon footprint and all the contraindications to that, we still get together once a year. And for the people on the board, so we're an all-volunteer group, right? And in terms of leadership, the people on the board, we get together another time in the winter. We try to be an open organization and a group that people can join and invest in, invest your ideas. So we just had this. We enjoy ourselves. We almost always do things with art and music. So this is what we just had in this latest General Assembly. We had a panel on liberation medicine, one on the North American Free Trade Agreement and the effects of that, the fallout of that, I think would be a good way to say it. I'll have to say I'm looking out here and I don't see anybody dressed in uniform, so I'm not sure I'm doing something right. Usually I do something or try to do something at APHA that attracts people in uniform to check us out. But maybe there are people here that aren't in uniform. In any case, we had an activist for human rights and the right to health looking at what's going on with Chiapas today. You've just seen a snapshot of that. And some community health projects and activism. You've already heard, Doctors for Global Health's been around now for working on 20 years. And although it's said that we talk about promoting health and human rights with the voices, no such thing as the voiceless, right? What we mean are the people whose voices have been beaten down, the silenced people, los acallados y acalladas. So I want to go back. So we've been having these General Assemblies for a while. I'm going to just give you just a quick. So we started in 1996 in a state park in Georgia, and for a while, all of them were in Georgia. Back even then, we were working at the synergy with art and human rights and education and health. This was from a photography contest that we had with the theme of health and human rights in 1996. And so we went along. You can see there weren't that many people that came. Was anybody here at any of those first five? I don't think so. So this is a group of health promoters from El Salvador. I'm not going to talk a lot about the place where we started in El Salvador. It's called Morazan. There's still a lot to talk about there and a lot going on. I'm very lucky. I haven't been there for a little more than a year, but I'm going to be going back next week for the Alamis. Group. Do y'all know what Alamis is? It's the Latin American Social Medicine Education Society. It's basically the people in education and social medicine who were not killed by the dictators over the last 30 years and managed to get together about 15 years ago or so in Ouro Preto in Brazil. And it's the partnership with a fellow named Matt Anderson. And a group of us who work on a journal called Social Medicine. The yearly meeting is going to be there in El Salvador. So we went along here having some, this is a long time ago now, right? But finally we got to a place where it wasn't a day, it was people stayed overnight in this Fort Yargo place. People still had a lot of fun. So you've already heard it's a social movement, it's student-friendly. It's not a student group, but it's student-friendly. And I actually want to stop right there just for a minute, introduce somebody. Come up, please. So Darian, see it. So was anybody at Darian's presentation yesterday?
So I gave a talk yesterday around 2:30, just basically on the student chapter of Doctors for Global Health. So in 2008, Dr. Daniel Bosch, who is on the board of directors for Doctors for Global Health, he started the first student chapter in the country here at Tulane University in New Orleans. And since then, we've been going strong every year. Every year, we transition. How it works with medical schools, by third year, sorry, I should introduce myself. I'm the president of the chapter, and I'm a second-year medical student at Tulane University. So the tricky thing about medical school and these clubs is that by third year, you start working in the hospitals, so you have to transition the club onto the earlier years because you no longer have time to run the organization. So how it works with us is by the time we reach second year, we apply, ask for leadership applications from the first years. We work with the first years for a couple months, do some programs and activities with them so they get the idea of leadership, and then we pass it on to them. So that way we can just keep the club sustainable and keep it going every year. So a couple things that we do is we have speakers come in from either Doctors for Global Health or MSF. We have a speaker series every year. We have a panel that talks about global health opportunities for students. We have journal clubs where we talk about human rights issues and global health issues. And we have other things like learning in the loo, where we put global health facts on the back of bathroom stalls, which I think is a cool idea. And we also have we created a global health elective as well. So we do lots of things, and we try to supplement the global health, give our students some global health exposure and human rights exposure that they wouldn't otherwise get. So that's kind of how we do it at our club.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So this, when we had these general assemblies, we always work with local folks. So like the first five of them were in Georgia, and then after that we went other places. Kalamazoo, Michigan was another one. So the one this last year was in Chiapas, which what I'm talking about. But before that it was in San Francisco, and then before that Boston, before that Los Angeles. We go from coast to coast, and the next one is going to be in Seattle. I just met someone here from Seattle, right? Yeah, so I hope you're going to be able to enjoy it, and they are enjoyable, right? We do a lot of dancing. So you can see this is a group of women who are fighting against homelessness and evictions, people that are foreclosures and working to keep people from actually getting evicted in Atlanta. So we're going along here. It's 1999. So we work with medical students. This was Monica was an internal medicine resident and a chief resident here in Tulane. And she's with a health promoter and another one of the local women here. And if you've got good eyes, you can see that the woman is wearing a coral necklace, which has special symbolism there. So this is the last one. So because we're talking about the year 2000 now, this was the last one that was in Georgia, and then I'm going to skip for 14 years or less. But I want to talk about Doctors for Global Health. One of the things we started using health as reconciliation in El Salvador. That's what we were doing. Part of that became symbolic of what we do. We built a bridge with the local folks, and then we had our first General Assembly outside of the United States in 2008, I think. And when we went there, the community had a surprise for us. They built another bridge over the River Torola. They'd gotten a grant from the King of Spain, if you can believe it. It was a big worldwide concourse or application, and the same engineer who was from Spain, who helped them and worked with them building the first bridge, got them to put in all the applications, filled out everything. Voila, there's a bridge here. A lot of people had died crossing the river, the other river and the little river, and this one too. And we even have a Doctors for Global Health Europe, if for those of you with a continental taste. And coming back to Chiapas, this is actually from a meeting a few years back with the Latin American social medicine, Latin American social psychology group. You all know this is the 25th anniversary of the murder of the Jesuit priests and their housekeeper and her 15-year-old daughter, who was raped before they killed her in front of the eyes of the priest. This was, of course, done under the auspices of the Salvadoran military, and many of the people who had done those murders had been trained at the United States School of the Americas in Columbus, Georgia. I'm from Georgia, so I have, you might say, a vested interest in looking at what we do as a country in the United States, including the contacts with El Salvador. Well, one of those priests was named Ignacio Martín Baró. Came up with the concept of liberation social psychology. That's how we came up with the idea of liberation medicine, the connection from Ignacio Martín Baró. And so here we are at the same place that we wound up having the General Assembly, the UNITIERRA, but a few years before, with at this conference, I think they had like, we expected like 200 people. We had 2,000 registrants just come in from all over Mexico. It was amazing. And the people you see here are from many places, including El Salvador, Italy, Mexico, Spain. Yeah. Does anybody here know, I don't have a way to do laser surgery on y'all, I don't think. In other words, a laser. But anybody know who this is? Maybe you've read a book called Witness to War. If you were in El Salvador, you'd know him by the name Camilo, but his name is Charlie Clements. And so Charlie Clements was one of our keynote speakers at the General Assembly that we had in 2005 at Columbia University. And the guy with him is Juan Manuel, who also has another name, but we won't go into that. Here he is at this most recent General Assembly. So here we are, Rise Up in Solidarity. There were 420 people. That was our that was the most people we've had at a General Assembly around the world. And this we had a pre-conference in Oaxaca. It's another one of the sites that DGH accompanies in Mexico, led by Irma Cruz. And then we had a visit to Actial on Friday coming in. And wherever we are, we have, I think when we were in Boston, we had a toxic walk through a neighborhood that has had some environmental racism foisted upon it by a local activist group there. In San Francisco, our Friday was walking, looking at the murals, in Los Angeles, we looked at the work of people that work with gangs and trying to help people get out of gangs. Homeboy Network and Homegirl Network, if y'all know those groups. So we went to Actial. We heard the voices of people who had survived the massacre and what they're doing still, what's going on with them. So our program in this General Assembly looked at the work that the communities were doing. And there were sessions by and for the health promoters. We had some themes of how youth work in their community. Natural medicine, how to sustain the work of health promoters and communities. It's very, very difficult to do. In the United States, we have, I guess, as hard a time as anyone. Funding goes out. People are dependent on some kind of funding to be health promoters. And a lot of the work that was done, even in the 70s, in the era of starting up community health workers and community health centers, is no longer being done. And also looking at international trade agreements, deportation. You know that under President Bush, Obama, unfortunately, more people have been deported than were ever deported before under administration, a Democrat or a Republican. It's really quite awful and a great disappointment to me and probably to all of us here. And how that affects local communities. And I am, it happens, a primary care doctor. And so I have a lot of patients who are immigrants. Some of them don't have their papers, some do. And when one of the family members gets deported, it makes a terrible difference, usually, to the rest of the family. I say usually because every once in a while somebody got deported that was doing domestic violence or something like that. This, it's a different matter I want to recognize, but in general, it's an awful thing. So just a few pictures here to get an idea of the ambiance. One of the things that happened in Mexico is that people that were supporting the Zapatista movement and the autonomous communities would be scooped up for no reason and put in jail as political prisoners. And I know that one of the people that was driving the taxi some of us around had himself just gotten out of prison about 2 months ago. He'd been in prison for more than 5 years for no just cause that anyone could figure out. In this session, the person in the center there, Ceci, is a human rights lawyer who works with people who've been imprisoned, and the guy that's given that's got the microphone in his hand is Ramiro Cortez, who I worked with as a health promoter for the time I was in El Salvador, and he's now the head of CDH, Association for Campesino Development in El Salvador. You can see we're having a good time. This reminds me of the statement by Emma. I read Emma, if I can't dance, I don't want to join your revolution. So I think that's good for us to always keep in mind when we're really getting in the thick of the fight, that it doesn't do us any good to get burnt out and cynical. In fact, that's exactly what the powers that be that are creating situations of social injustice would love. So
live it up!
and dance a lot tonight if you get the chance. Enjoy the New Orleans reality. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. And I also want to say that the work that Doctors for Global Health does, we're careful about where we get funds. I think some people think that's stupid. Maybe sometimes I think it's stupid too, but we don't take money from just anyone. We don't take money from pharma or tobacco companies. So far we haven't even taken it from governments, but we're not necessarily opposed to that. But we look very closely at where the money comes from and what people expect that give us donations. You can say that there's no such thing as untainted money, and I'm sure that that's true, but there certainly are degrees. So we try to be a socially good investment toward health and social justice. And then a lot of the work is done by people whenever we can, right? Nobody's getting paid for it in the United States, at least. And so we have these meetings, and we meet by telephone in order to run the group. We have an 18-member board. I want you to remember that la leche materna is la mejor. So this is one of the sisters that works with us in Chiapas. And then because this is a socialist caucus, I had to put up this billboard. Right, so if you can identify these three people, you get a gold star, no, a red star on your way out. Okay, well, good. So I want to pause here for a minute because I'm going to do something else. But I just want to know, does anybody have any questions about the group Doctors for Global Health? Pretty clear about where we're coming from and what we're trying to do, at least. Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect, but we're certainly. Yes, please.
Just as a percentage of how much time you spend.
Wow. You know, couple of things that Doctors for Global Health did, we only go where people invite us, right? So we try not to be neo-colonialist. And when we are somewhere, we work at the rhythm that the local group that we're working with asks. So it depends on where we are. So what would you say in Chiapas, Linnea, to something like that? It's kind of two different things. Usually people that come and volunteer in Chiapas come and actually work in the hospital there. With the sisters, and that you'll see things there that I wish you wouldn't. You heard about the work with latrines and vaccinations and stuff. You see typhoid fever. You see children die of typhoid. That shouldn't that shouldn't happen, right? I mean, that shouldn't happen anywhere. You see people with, you'll see so much tuberculosis of any kind that you can imagine. You'll see people with diabetes, and a strange kind of diabetes that that does not necessarily have to do with obesity, but may, we're not sure, but may have to do with the fact that it's cheaper to buy a bottle of Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola than it is to buy a bottle of a similar quantity of water. Right? Yes. So I think that depends on where each of us is in our own community. We don't have an official program. You've heard what students are doing at Tulane. I can tell you what in Boston we have local initiatives. So we've worked with people who are trying to organize in a hotel. We've worked with looking at education of certain groups of people. What we ask people to do is look at your community and join something that's going on locally. And if that's something that's going on locally, can use the name of Doctors for Global Health as a internationally recognized group that is also affiliated with a group called the People's Health Movement. You know, if there's a way to share what you're doing and get support from it in solidarity, absolutely. We're all the time looking at local projects wherever we are that that we can be part of. And that's, you know, if you join as a member, Dr. Figo, we ask you to do that as well.
Yeah, you have projects all over the world. So how do you decide which projects get, like, how do you spread the funding equally so that no project, I guess, goes under because it doesn't have enough funding?
Yeah, so that's really hard. We don't spread it equally. We spread it, you know, to each according to its need. Anyway, we try to look at the people that we've been working with and what they need. We don't abandon projects, but there have been along the way several projects that, for one reason or another, they weren't working. Usually because the local group that we were working with turned out it wasn't practicing any kind of internal democracy or respect for people, or there wasn't. We tried to have some oversight in terms of financial. You know, We actually are fiscally very conscious, even though we don't have a lot to be conscious with. When we have a need that we don't have the money for, we actually try to do a special fundraising project for that. And so far, we've been able to meet not what everybody wants necessarily or could get, but what we feel like at least our obligations are. It's a great question. And like I said, we only go where people invite us, but we don't go everywhere where people invite us. We look at what people are working. If the local group has a sense of working together using the principles, we have a group of principles, the Doctors for Global Health, that include largely respect, gender respect, and other things like that. I'm going to go on because I want to talk a little bit about another place where Doctors for Global Health works. It's called Santa Marta, Cabañas. And this was the first place we worked was in El Salvador in Morazan. And you've heard me reference that a couple of times. But the next place we worked almost the same time that we started working in Chiapas, and Linnea went there for a year to Chiapas. But you've got to remember that back in the time of the armed civil conflict in El Salvador, Linnea lived for 2 years right up there. She didn't talk a lot about that. There's a community that I want you to know about, and there's a specific reason I want you to know about, because there's an actionable step here that y'all can do. So this is a map of El Salvador, and right there is Morazan. There's the Tarola River. That's where that bridge is that I was showing you. But right now we're talking about here in Cabañas, which is a different place. They can't locate it. There we go. So Santa Marta, it's a community that's on the border with Honduras, and also between San Miguel and Chalatenango. It's got about 3,000 people. It's subsistence agriculture, just like in Morazan and like in a lot of El Salvador. But historically, the rich people, the oligarchy, grabbed up the fertile place, and there's lots of fertile land in El Salvador, but forced the indigenous and other poor people further and further to poorer soil. And the people in this particular place, there's not much to do that will get them money. So a lot of them had people go to the United States and send money back. They're called remisas, or remittances. And that's how a lot of people survive, not just in El Salvador, of course, but around the world. Can you see what people are holding up here, by the way? Uteruses, yeah. Can you imagine? That should be like in elementary schools in the United States, but I can imagine that some parents might be really upset. Anyway, with holding the uteruses in the air and other things like that done by a group called COCO-C, I'm going to talk with you about in a minute, the teen pregnancy rate has gone way down in this particular community. We don't know why exactly. So there's a lot of art. There's a lot of art in El Salvador. El Salvador is a wonderful, wonderful country. Don't let anybody tell you any different. It's bad to stereotype, but I can tell you this. The Salvadorans that I've worked with are some of the hardest working people in the world. And I've heard people who are really quite racist say that they would work with a Salvadoran anytime. And, you know, in my work with people that are immigrants in the United States, it's very interesting. Anyway, so you can see this is a rendition of a lot of the community history in Santa Marta. So one of the places where a lot of people from Santa Marta actually went to is near Reston, Virginia. And I just thought I'd give a shout out to some pupuserias there. So if you've got X-ray vision, you can see that this is a list of the pupuserias. Pupusas are a Salvadoran food. I'm not going to say that it's good for you if you're if you've got low cholesterol. That's for sure. But they're absolutely delicious. Anyway, and this particular person on the equivalent of Yelp said that the pupuseria Mi Champita has really good three cheese pupusas. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. So there's a very large group from Santa Marta in Herndon, Virginia. There's been a lot of interesting things going on. There's a group, I don't know if you've heard of them, called the Minutemen. It's an unfortunate name. They're on the border in Mexico and the United States. They hunt people, literally. They hunt people with rifles. They round them up, people that are coming through the desert there. They round them up and they call the immigration. They're very proud of themselves. I have a lot of slides I could show you about them. They tend to be very, very cozy with the leadership of Arizona, the Republican leadership. Anyway, this presentation is about that because everything is interrelated. But the Minutemen have seen fit to come up to this particular part of Virginia to try to support racist legislation against immigrants there. There's a lot of interaction between Herndon, Virginia, and Santa Marta. Everything is related, right? And so we got the inhabitants of Santa Marta. They had a terrible time of it in the armed civil conflict. In fact, they did a guinda, a march out of their territory there in the middle of the night, being pursued by the Salvadoran military. They crossed the river to Honduras, and they were caught in a crossfire between the two militaries, Salvadoran and Honduran, and just mowed down. And if you go there, they'll sell you little cloths that show the rendition of that particular crossing, which, of course, has a lot of symbolism. You can go back into many religions and see that they certainly feel like that's part of their history. Doctors for Global Health has been working with them since about 1998. We first had a long-term volunteer go in 2001. This is just a picture there, idyllic. So one of the first things that we started doing was working with rehabilitation, community-based rehabilitation. And I like this photograph. It says a lot, I think, about what the potential for accompaniment. The mother of this little girl knows very well that we took it. She's very happy for it to be shown all over the world. So our longest standing program is there in the community-based rehabilitation. There's physical therapy. We actually have a yoga program there. And we have somebody who lives in Mallorca and another person who lives in Argentina who is actually an emergency medicine physician and a yoga instructor. And they both come there and help work with yoga. And then we have respiratory therapy. We have physical therapy. A lot of our physical therapists come from Spain, from the Doctors for Global Health Europe. Another part of this community that's quite wonderful, it's a resettled community. So this community came back in 1987 during the middle of this armed civil conflict, accompanied by international folks, and said, we're going to come back and take over our territory, kill us all if you want, but good luck, and the world's going to be watching. And using that technique, they managed to come back and start Santa Marta again. They've got one of the best primary care school systems, public schools in the country. And those kids that were, most of them born in the refugee camp in Mesa Grande in Honduras, many of them have now gone to college. Either they're in El Salvador, some of them have gone to the ELAM, the Latin American Medical School in Cuba, and are back in El Salvador now practicing. Anyway, this particular group are thespians. They're artists. They have this great artist group called Cocosí. Coco is a way of saying the brain, and C means yes, right? And it's a committee against, Comité contra SIDA, so it's a committee against AIDS. And they have come all out trying to prevent AIDS and trying to work with people, including people in prison who have HIV. They're just dynamite. I took this picture actually at the International AIDS Conference in Mexico in, I think, 2008. And they had been invited to come up and gotten a grant to come up and do presentations at that conference. So there's Cocosí. They're amazing. They've actually gone on tour to Europe a couple of times, and they've come up and performed at our Doctors for Global Health General Assembly in Los Angeles. And here, this is just one of their things that they do. This one kind of has a dark cast to it, and so I'm going to let it lead into this. This is an article that came in The Nation, was written in The Nation in, I think, August of 2011, the story of a community's effort to ban gold mining in El Salvador. Environmental martyrs, economic interests, mainly from Canada and the United States, and D.C.-based tribunals. So I just want to quickly go through this. So this is there's one guy there. His name's Elvis, but he goes by Peter. He was born in a refugee camp. So he wrote these words in 2009, when writing words like this could mean you got killed. Now, this was not during the armed civil conflict. This was after. But this was right at the beginning. A guy had just been tortured and killed, and several more people were to be after he wrote these words, which is just to say that the major danger here in Cabañas is that there's a group in power for 20 years that controls politically everything, including the business. And so here's a communique. You can read this. This is the 20th of December, 2009. The environmentalist Ramiro Rivera Gomez was a leader in the community resistance against Pacific Rim, and he was assassinated. And not only him, but his wife was killed beside him, and a little girl was wounded. It was done by hitmen. The community is fully convinced that they were all paid for by Pacific Rim. What is certain is that three very well-dressed lawyers showed up to defend the guy that did the killing, and he managed to get off, even though he actually killed him. I don't mention his name here, but you can easily find it. He'd already been shot 8 times in the back a few months before, and he had a police escort, and he was still killed right there in cold blood. Again, we've got to enjoy the fact that art can be used. It reminds me of Guernica. Anyway, So then we have another person who was killed that same, just a little bit later, Dora Recinos. She was 8 months pregnant when she was killed, shot. But the response of Pacific Rim was actually to say, oh, no. In fact, one of our board members called him up and got a tour by one of their very nicely presented public relations people. And said, oh, we would never do anything like that, of course. By the way, they decided to sue the Salvadoran government for $100 million because what happened was they lost their right to mine there because when people do gold mining in your community, it's not good for the community. We know that. I'm almost done here. I just want you to know that, unfortunately, it said that she was the last one killed, but she wasn't. Actually, a young student was putting up leaflets against the mining there and disappeared and was found dead 10 days later. His name is Juan Francisco Duran Ayala. That was in June 4th, 2011. Just a few months ago, Pacific Rim and Oceanic Gold bought Pacific Rim, was taken to a trial in Geneva. Not much came of it, but at least they had the opportunity. And then, so this is what you can do. Try to figure out a way to let Oceanic Gold, to let the United States government especially, know that Oceanic Gold does not deserve $300 million in compensation from the Salvadoran government. Their budget's not even $1 billion for not being able to, you know, go in there and get gold. But that's what they're trying to do. Never mind who's been killed, etc. All right. So during that time, you can imagine the community was in a difficult place. A lot of a few international groups had been working there. Most of them left. But our group from DGH Europe came back and was there to do psychotherapy with the people in an ambiance of great fear and uncertainty. And so I'm just going to close showing you this little picture of Kokosi doing high blood happiness work with the community. Thanks.